Welcome, everyone, to Monday Match Analysis. I'm Gil Gross. Carlos Alcaraz is Roland Garros champion. He beats Alexander Zverev in the final in five sets, comes back from down two sets to one. It is his first career title at RG, his third career major title. He now has one on all three surfaces, the youngest man ever to accomplish that feat. We're already in career slam mode when he goes to Australia next year. He's 21. He's going to be 21 years old at the Australian Open playing for the career Grand Slam. Crazy stuff. Three majors in the last 3 years now. He's really only been a full-time tour-level pro for 3 years. That's the kind of pace he's on. Now, was this final a clinical performance by Alcaraz? Was it his highest level of tennis from start to finish? No, it wasn't. But I do think it embodied what Alcaraz has said he wants to be his identity as a player, a phrase that might have been coined by Carlitos himself. Maybe it came about by way of Juan Carlos Ferrero. But early on, Alcaraz sort of inherited his own little catchphrase. He said, cabeza, corazón, cojones. Head, heart, balls. Now, if I'm translating that into more concrete tennis terminology, I would say, well, head, heart, balls, that means tactics, fight, and fearlessness. And despite Alcaraz struggling at points in this match to play his best tennis, I also thought that this was as much a display of tactics, fight, and fearlessness as you could ever see out of a tennis player. And in this case, it is propelling Alcaraz to this five-set win. In this analysis, I'm going to kind of go one by one. I won't go in the order of cabeza, corazón, cojones. I'm going to do a little cabeza, cojones, corazón, if I may switch up the order there. But I want to go kind of individually, step by step, because I do think it paints a good picture of where Alcaraz actually found a way to win in this match. And in general, normally I kind of give you a detailed tease of what's to come in the analysis, but I'm going to keep this one simple and just say the first half is going to be very focused on Alcaraz. The second half is going to be focused much more on Zverev. And I will address the controversial call in the fifth set, something that people are talking about. Was Alexander Zverev robbed? I don't think so. I'll tell you why. That's later. Also, a big week ahead that I want to discuss before we fully get into it. Obviously, the Steve Flink interview is coming. The post-Roland Garros mailbag is coming. But I do have a special announcement in regards to the mailbag, which is that I am launching, Monday Match Analysis is launching a Discord channel. One of the most rewarding and most remarkable parts of my YouTube journey has been the comment section. And that's been the case from start to finish, even when my channel and my show was quite a bit smaller. And, you know, obviously there's a population of people who watch on the pod or listen on the podcast platforms, and they're very much appreciated as well. But the YouTube comment sections have been so engaged, so active for so long. And we wanted to give you guys a platform to interact with each other when it comes to tennis on a 24-hour basis that isn't necessarily attached to the video. So the link to join the Discord is in the description. We'll make it the pinned comment if I remember to do that. And it will also be a new way to get involved in the mailbag. If you are someone who misses the posts on the YouTube community tab often, and you're unable to kind of get in on the mailbag fun, Discord will now be another and a new platform to do it. So for the post-RG mailbag, I will tell you right now, I'm going to spend the first 20 minutes or so on Discord comments and Discord questions. So get on over there to join the Discord and ask those mailbag questions for later this week. Also, a big edition of The Draw coming up. Link is also in the description for The Draw. That is my tennis newsletter, your one-stop shop for the best tennis content on the internet, delivered straight to your inbox every Tuesday morning. All right, let's start with Alcaraz's tactics, because I think he played an extraordinarily tactical match. Well, the first thing is he was very much poised to find Zverev's weakness and set the patterns that were going to be most advantageous to him. And he did that with really, really smart backhand direction. He was trading his backhand down the line to set up the forehand-to-forehand exchange. He was doing it consistently and relentlessly. And this was rinse and repeat in the first set. He got the reward for it in the first set because Zverev came out a little bit scratchy and tentative on his forehand, not quite accelerating, not finding any penetration or damage off of that wing, and, you know, giving up attackable, slower balls to Alcaraz, which is, of course, what he's looking for. First set ground stroke winners were 7 for Alcaraz, 2 for Zverev. Carlitos was just setting that forehand-to-forehand exchange and then using his superior firepower once he was able to set that pattern. Now, of course, there's a wrestling match here when these two play because Zverev has a cross-court that he likes, that he prefers, and that's the other way. It's the ad side cross-court in the backhand-to-backhand. So for Sasha, this isn't rocket science. He knows all of this. So he wants to do the same thing, and he wants to pattern change by trading his forehand down the line, setting the backhand a backhand. And he did look to do that, but I felt that Alcaraz was countering with a lot of aggression on his backhand off of Zverev's forehand down the line pattern change. So when Zverev was trading his forehand down the line, he was actually getting hurt immediately off of Alcaraz's two-hander. And the reason why this is open, a couple reasons. One, when you change the direction of the ball, especially when you're not in an attacking position, it is obviously harder to time. Therefore, oftentimes you need to be a little bit more tentative with it. Slow down your swing, perhaps, and maybe add some safety. As far as down the lines go, usually the ball is going to bleed more towards the middle. And then if we get into the minutia of the positioning of it, when Zverev hits his forehand down the line into Alcaraz's backhand, he usually doesn't quite get himself to the center of the court. There's less time to recover, and he actually wants to be off center. He wants to be shaded to his left when the ball is in Alcaraz's backhand corner, because if you look at the geometry of it, when the ball is in a corner, there's more width available on the cross court. There's less width available on the down the line. That's why players, when they go cross court, they're safer. They're in better position. But what I saw a ton of, what I charted a lot of, was Zverev forehand trade down the line, Alcaraz backhand winner cross court, or Alcaraz backhand attack cross court, forced error, draws the short ball, whatever, right? Soon as Zverev hit that weaker pattern change down the line, Alcaraz could attack. That wasn't happening the other way. When Alcaraz was taking his backhand line, Zverev was not hurting Alcaraz off of the forehand cross immediately off of that. Even though off of a weaker down the line that bleeds middle, off of any down the line shot that's a little bit tentative, the cross court is going to be open, always. Alcaraz could take advantage, Zverev couldn't. For the match, Zverev hit 302 forehands, 274 backhands. Alcaraz hit 302 forehands, 258 backhands. So when we look at the baseline directionals, when we look at, okay, who was able to find their strength more often, who was able to find their opponent's weakness more often, the numbers are pretty clear. Zverev had to hit a lot of forehands. Alcaraz got to hit a lot of forehands and didn't have to hit as many backhands. That's advantage Carlitos. That was tactical poise on his end, and it was a correction from the Australian Open match where I felt like either he wasn't thinking all that much out there or his ego and his confidence was getting in the way of his desire to actually shy away from hitting it at Zverev's backhand. Not sure which one. The variety from Carlitos is the second part of this. It was stunning. Literally as much variety as I've seen someone play from the baseline. I thought there were a bunch of different things we were seeing, but it's got to start with the slow and high stuff. The slow and high stuff was the most consistent form of variety that Alcaraz was bringing to the table, and I thought it was most crucial on the return of serve. Alcaraz using a deep return position, a little bit deeper on average than what he was implementing for previous opponents throughout the tournament at Roland Garros, which makes sense because Zverev brings more heat off of the serve. But what was Alcaraz doing when he was able to kind of get a jump on the serve and get clean contact on the serve? He was throwing the ball straight up in the air. He was taking the pace off, and he was throwing it up, tons of height. Moonball, you might say. That was the return of serve. It totally neutralized Zverev's plus one. And I know Zverev isn't really known as a serve plus one player, although on the forehand, he has the ability to be a pretty solid plus one forehand player. I think he's got the best plus one backhand in all of tennis. And I think it's the best, but it needs to come in at a comfortable height, at a comfortable speed. And Zverev needs to be able to step in and lean in to a plus one backhand. He cannot do it off of a moon ball. He just can't. Zverev on the plus one, 7 winners to 11 unforced errors. And when I say plus one, that's the third shot. So I'm looking at every point that Zverev served, and I'm looking at the third shot of the rally. What did he do on that third shot? 7 winners, 11 unforced errors. Now, I'd like to include forced errors there. So he also hit 6 forced errors. So if you add up 7 winners, 6 forced errors, then it becomes 13 finishes to 11 unforced errors. That is still close to a 50-50 ratio off of, behind what is one of the best serves in all of men's tennis. If we're being realistic, probably the second best serve in all of men's tennis. And all he could manage on the plus one was 13 finishes to 11 unforced errors. That, my friends, is a return strategy that is working from Alcaraz. High, slow, loopy returns. Now, we also saw this in the baseline rallies. And we didn't just see Alcaraz do this on his forehand or his backhand. We saw it off of both wings. And we didn't see him do it to Zverev only to one side. We actually saw him do it to both wings. But I was actually struck how in the backhand and backhand exchanges, Alcaraz's high loopy ball was really sapping Zverev's backhand offense fully. And look, it's not hard to understand why that is so effective. I don't know of a single two-handed backhand in all of tennis ever that is able to take a ball with not a lot of pace from behind the baseline with their opponent in good defensive position and actually do reliable damage. I just don't know of it. And Zverev at times did try to step in and take the ball on the rise. It was effective for him at times, but to do that, often it required him approaching the net. And that led to its own issues, as we'll demonstrate, as I'll go over. But in general, Zverev wasn't necessarily taking it on the rise, and the high loopy ball was just, again, completely eliminating his ability to be offensive on the backhand in particular. Not that it was super easy to be offensive on the forehand. Now, what Zverev would sometimes do is he would use that high loopy ball as an opportunity to hit a runaround forehand. Because even though Zverev's backhand is superior to his forehand, forehand is still bigger. So if he's going to attack a ball without any pace, the forehand still generates better than the backhand. So I saw this a couple times. I saw Zverev see the high slow ball. Okay, run around. Let's try to attack forehand inside in. And then Alcaraz counterattacks because Zverev doesn't create enough on that runaround forehand. And he's done what he never does. He's pulled himself out of position. Every time you run around, you better do damage because you've pulled yourself out of position. If you go inside in, same thing, right? It's the same thing as a down the line. So I've already talked about it here. When you go inside in, cross court is open if you don't put your opponent in some sort of off balance situation, or if you don't disrupt their contact point in some way, that counterattack is open. Now, although the high slow stuff was the most common form of variety Alcaraz is using, remember, variety is not variety without contrast. So if Alcaraz just became a moonballer for the whole match, that's not variety. That's moonballing. There's a difference. Variety is when you mix it up. Alcaraz paired the high stuff, the heavy stuff, the loopy stuff, with the short stuff, the stuff that stays low, the stuff that you need to move forward in order to hit. So this is where I'm going to incorporate some screenshots. Remember, it's not just the backhand that you drop, that you can drop the ball short on strategically. You can also do it on the forehand. So what I've done, I've taken this Love 40 game just to start and show you one example of Alcaraz using the short forehand angle cross court, which is going to be intentionally shallow. You don't always want depth. So Alcaraz hits a serve here. Zverev with the hard backhand return down the line. Down the line shot opens up the cross court. Alcaraz hooks this short angle, and now Zverev is going to look to track it down. I've drawn two lines here if you're watching on YouTube. One is a perfectly horizontal line. The other is a diagonal line. Which line is a longer line? It's the diagonal line. So by dropping the ball short, it makes Zverev cover a longer distance. That makes it harder for him to get to the ball. And when he does get to the ball, it's at an uncomfortable height. So he has to slice this forehand. He puts it hopelessly into the kill zone, and Alcaraz makes no mistake, punishing it, going behind Zverev for the forehand winner. That's one example off the forehand. But in the fifth set, one of the things that really stood out to me for Alcaraz was his use of the short backhand slice cross court, which turned defensive positions for Alcaraz into advantageous positions in a snap of the finger. I should really say in one brush stroke of the tennis racket, as one might say. So look at, I have three examples here, all in the fifth set. Let's go through these real quick. Here's 2-1, Alcaraz up a break, but this is the next point. So he's in this Love 40 hole with Zverev trying to get back in it, and we just saw him hit the short forehand plus one sharp angle and the forehand winner behind it. Here's the next point. Alcaraz, he's going to throw some height on the backhand cross court. This is the loopy ball we're talking about. Look at this net clearance. What is this, 15 feet over the net? Now Zverev is going to do the whole take this on the rise thing and try to be aggressive. So let's step as tight on the baseline as possible, take it on the rise, and Zverev cranks this real hard cross court. Beautiful backhand by Zverev. Alcaraz is on his court, on his horse into the backhand corner. He is sliding outside the single sideline. Backhand slice. And this right here, I drew a little red box in the middle of the court. This is where Zverev wants the ball. And against 99% of players, let's be realistic, either they don't make this shot in the court or they float it into the middle from a desperate situation. I mean, you know, some players might be able to get it deep, but Alcaraz is like, nah, I'm not going to do the deep floaty thing. I'm going to do that short, knifed backhand slice cross court from out of my corner. And now you make Zverev move about 7 feet inside the baseline, hit a backhand, and, I mean, he's in an awkward position here. You kind of have to finish the point and go down the line. And he has to get the ball up and down really quickly because he's hitting from a low contact point over the highest part of the net, and the baseline is close. So really tough shot for Zverev, and he's going to miss it just long. Even the terrific backhand of Zverev can't make it happen on this shot. Maybe Zverev could have sliced back cross court, or maybe he could have drop shot it down the line off of this ball, but there are no great options. That's great slice defense by Alcaraz. Let's go to the next one. Now it is 1-3 deuce. Zverev serving at 1-3 deuce. Alcaraz hits this forehand return off of the wide serve. Zverev has a good look at this plus one forehand. He has a lot of court to hit into. If this were Alcaraz's plus one forehand, there's a good chance this point is over. Alcaraz is going to just pummel the ball down the line and finish the point or come forward and finish it net. But Zverev, he doesn't quite have that artillery off of this ball. So he hits his forehand down the line and doesn't quite finish. Alcaraz gets there. He hits the high looping backhand. Zverev is going to take this hard on the rise again. Sharp angle cross court, and there goes Alcaraz again. In the same position here, he's on the dead run on his backhand. He's going to slice this backhand. And again, Zverev is looking for a ball in the middle of the court. Guess what? He's not going to get it because Alcaraz hits this, 3 feet beyond the net? This is an extremely short backhand slice. It is essentially a defensive drop shot. That's really what it is. Zverev gets up to it, can't keep two hands off on the racket. He has to slice the ball off of his shoelaces. It sets up an easy backhand pass for Alcaraz that he threads the needle down the line. Next one. Zverev does hold serve in that 1-3 game. But this is game point now at 3-2 for Alcaraz. Zverev, backhand cross court. It's another good one. Alcaraz on the run, slides, slices his backhand. It goes short cross court, and Zverev doesn't quite read this properly. You can see him kind of shuffling laterally, and what he really needed to do here is start running forward. He needed to get inside the baseline quickly for probably what should have been either a backhand or a backhand slice, and instead Zverev is trying to run around this and hit a forehand, but look what happens. It gets super low on him. That ball is going to take its second bounce about 3 feet inside the baseline, and Zverev has to change desperately to a slice forehand grip and hopelessly chop at this ball, and he hits it into the net. So there's another slice backhand short cross court that draws the error. And that's Zverev's best setup shot, his backhand cross court. That's what he likes to attack with. That's of all of the attacks that Zverev has in his toolkit, that's the one that he can hit with his eyes closed 10 out of 10 times. And Alcaraz neutralizes it time and time again with variety. Because what Zverev wants off of that aggressive cross-court backhand is a nice comfortable ball to then redirect with the backhand down the line, or maybe the forehand inside in. But you can't hit a comfortable backhand down the line when Alcaraz is looping the ball 15 feet in the air, or when he's slicing it and it's essentially a drop shot and now you have to go run in and get it. You take away these options. Variety, variety, variety. It was stunning from Alcaraz. Now let's go to the fearlessness. We have moved on to the cojones section of this analysis. Look, down the stretch in the fifth set, it was hard to say because the match was so up and down. Like, there were a lot of violent twists in this match, you could say. And because of that, you know, the nature of the match, it was somewhat hard to say, okay, who do you favor going into this fifth set? Zverev, 10-1 at Roland Garros in fifth sets. Alcaraz, 10-1 in his career in fifth sets. Well, you know, I go back to what I said in the preview. It's the 5-4-30 all test. Are you going to back yourself? Are you going to rip the ball into a corner? Can you do it? Do you have the cojones? Do you have the fearlessness? Well, let's take a look at that. So first, I know that we've kind of been hinting at it, but this 4-5 game was key. Sorry, not 4-5. This 2-1 game in the fifth set was key because Alcaraz goes down love 40. I showed you the forehand winner on the first point. I showed you the backhand slice defense on the second point. At 30-40, he hits an enormous plus one forehand for a winner. Just unloads on it. No fear. Faces another break point after the deuce point. He hits a kick wide, serve and volley, service winner. Perfectly executed kick serve out wide, great angle. And Zverev was in an awful position to try to hit a backhand passing shot. He ends up hitting the net. Then he hits an aggressive backhand down the line to force an error. And on game point, kick out wide, backhand drop shot down the line, which is kind of the furthest distance that Zverev needs to cover after returning a kick serve out wide on the ad court, taking the return cross court. Alcaraz steps in, backhand drop shot down the line. That's a great pattern for Carlitos. He nails it. It's a winner. Zverev doesn't even come close to covering it. And that is how Alcaraz gets out of that love 40 hole at 2-1. Did Zverev do much wrong there? No. Alcaraz just, he brought it. He came through. He took matters into his own hands. That's the point I'm really trying to make here. Let's go to one other game that was really crucial in the fifth set. 3-2, Alcaraz serving, 30-all. What does he do at 30-all? This is the 4-5 30-all test, isn't it? It's just 3-2, 30-all. Huge serve plus a forehand down the line winner. Later in that game, perfect serve and volley to save break point. Another serve plus winner on the next point to produce a game point. And Alcaraz ends up winning the game. There was zero fear. He went after it. And that's all I have to say. There's nothing deeper than that. It's just he was willing to be daring. And I didn't really get that sense from Zverev in the fifth set. What about the heart from Alcaraz? Let's end on that in terms of the whole shebang. First of all, the commitment to variety was also a commitment to do some running. That's not the easy way out. The easy way out is to, you know, try to crush the ball, do a little ball bashing. That's the easy way out. But I felt that Alcaraz, in being so disciplined with his variety, showed not only a lot of tactical poise and guile and ability, but also just a willingness to back his legs. And in the bigger picture, Carlitos wins back-to-back five setters, both over 4 hours, did not appear to be 100%, just fought through it. Well, he wasn't getting the pop on the legs from his serve in the fifth set. His average first serve speed was the lowest of the match in the fifth. So you know he was feeling it. He had the medical timeout. He got that left groin worked on. I don't know exactly how he was feeling or what was going on, but I felt that he was having a battle through, and he did. So that's the heart aspect of it. And with that, I want to move on from Alcaraz and talk a little bit about Zverev. First, the essential question, was this a nerve management loss? Was it? Was Gil right? Was it all about the nerve management? It's what I've been saying about Zverev for, you know, 3-4 years. The reason why I'm just not convinced that he's going to win a major despite being someone who has won 2 ATP finals, 6 Masters, and the Olympic gold, which on paper is someone who should, you know, always win a slam. When you're able to do those things outside the slams, you should be able to win a slam. But that's always been the thing holding me back is the nerve management. So, you know, I never want to just say, oh, he lost another slam final. It's nerve management. Never want to do that. You got to watch the matches. You got to use your eyes. So what do we see here? I saw a match in which if Zverev played his ordinary level from start to finish, he likely wins the match. He likely wins the match. But in the first set, there were a ton of jitters. He did not come out with any confidence on his forehand. He did not come out hitting the ball as big as he's capable of hitting the ball, as deep as he's capable of hitting the ball. He was tight in the first set, and it gave Alcaraz a chance to pounce and earn an early advantage. And then Alcaraz played loose game, 2-all in the second set. Really brutal game, 4 unforced errors in that one from Alcaraz. And you could see at snap of the fingers, Zverev just relaxed. We'll kind of get into it, but you could really see how the shoulders loosened up, the arms loosened up, the mind freed up. Started playing much better tennis. But at the end of the day, he goes up 2-1. And I even tweeted this. This is where the test starts. This is where the nerve management test begins. Just like when he was up 2-1 at the U.S. Open in 2020. I'm sure I tweeted the same thing. This is where the test begins. Because it's easy to play from behind. Now, there are other aspects of the mental game that playing from behind tests. How tenacious are you? Do you fight hard from behind, right? Like, do you get dejected? Do you get discouraged? Do you give up easily? Zverev does none of those things. Zverev is a battler. He's a warrior. And I've always given him full credit for that. He's a warrior. But nerve management, it's a separate department, man. It's a different aisle in the store. And that's where you just don't really see it until, okay, it's 2-1. You're up 2-1. Now what do you got? And Alcaraz wins the fourth and the fifth, 6-1, 6-2. Volleys. That's where you could really see, like, if you're going to fault Zverev for one part of his game collapsing, it wasn't the second serve. Although, after hitting no double faults, after the first 2 points of the match, he hit no double faults for the rest of the first set, the rest of the second set, and the rest of the third set, and then he hit 2 in the fourth, 2 in the fifth. But it wasn't about the second serve. It wasn't really about the forehand. Although he wasn't super confident on the forehand, it did not break down in any meaningful way. It was the volleys. The volleys killed him. And I don't know when it started, but first service game of the fourth set, Zverev had an easy forehand volley coming in behind his serve, lots of court to hit into. He was just kind of safe with it, and Alcaraz somehow gets there and plays a sliding slice lob over his head. And then on break point, Alcaraz hits a backhand pass, basically right up the gut, like right at Zverev, and Sasha volleys deep. He volleys hard, but he volleys deep. We always kind of say it, against the fastest players in the world, if you volley deep, they're probably going to get there. Alcaraz gets there, scrambles for a forehand down the line running pass. It's two volleys that could have been put away and didn't, and that sets the tone, giving Alcaraz a 2-love lead to start the fourth set. And from there, man, after this 1-all game in the fifth set, and this is, if you want to talk about nerve management, and if you want to look to answer the question, well, how critical of Zverev should we be? It's really the 1-all game in the fifth set where you say, uh-oh, that was really bad. That was bad to the level of you wouldn't have played a game that bad if you weren't dealing with demons and if you weren't dealing with scar tissue. And I do believe that. The 1-all game in the fifth, I don't think that happens if the situation wasn't what the situation was. Because on the first point, he hits an easy backhand volley with the entire court open. He hits it long. And then on the second point, he serves in volleys. And it's a floating return. And it's a very regulation forehand volley that he missed in the net. And this one was a little bit more excusable because there were a lot of options there, but there wasn't an obvious option. So maybe there was some indecision on the forehand volley. Then he double faults on the next point. Then he hits a service winner at love 40. And then he misses a backhand long, a neutral trade, which he almost never does. So two easy volley misses, a double fault, and a backhand unforced error. That's the break of serve in the fifth set that decides the match. And it was gift-wrapped utterly and completely. And the tough part, and this is in the bigger picture, the tough part about this with what happened with Zverev just zooming out, scar tissue And this is cruel, and it's not fair, but it doesn't get any better. It gets worse. It gets harder. And that's what Zverev needs to contend with right now, or moving forward, I should say. Not right now, but moving forward. The scar tissue is now even deeper when it comes to closing out a match at a major final, because he's now been up 2-1 twice. And it's hard to deal with that. It's not easy. I don't think it's going to be easy for Ons Jabeur. I don't think it's going to be easy for Alexander Zverev. I think it's a little bit different for like Casper Ruud. At least he was not in those finals. He was just outclassed, outplayed, didn't have a chance. That's actually better than what Zverev has had to deal with, in my opinion. I do want to kind of cover how Zverev pushed it to 5, right? Because he wins the second set, he wins the third set. That's part of the match as well. So the first thing I want to highlight is he did turn around the forehand-to-forehand issues in set 2. I sort of alluded to it, but after that sloppy 2-all game in the second set by Alcaraz, Zverev started accelerating on his forehand in a big way, and he was no longer being overpowered in that particular pattern because he found the forehand. Zverev also built an absolutely massive consistency advantage against an Alcaraz who was just making a lot of mistakes. Unforced errors in sets 2 and 3 combined were 29 for Alcaraz, 9 for Zverev. 29-9. I would almost say that's insurmountable, but then you remember that, boy, I mean, Alcaraz was up 5-3 in that third set. It almost sounds, and I don't want it to sound like this, it almost sounds like I'm saying, well, Zverev only had success because Alcaraz played poorly. Alcaraz got sloppy. I think that's unfair because I think part of this matchup is that Zverev is less prone to error. Built into this head-to-head is the fact that Alexander Zverev is better at limiting gifts than Carlos Alcaraz. So when you see the unforced error count, when you see the mistakes that Alcaraz was making and Zverev, in contrast, being airtight, I mean, 9 unforced errors over the course of 2 sets, that's terrific. It's not something where I say, well, Alcaraz is just throwing this away. It's more so that I see, okay, Zverev is taking a part of this matchup that he has an advantage in, and that advantage is playing out in a way that is resulting in him getting the better of play. That's how I look at it. Now, in an alternate universe where Zverev wins this final and wins Roland Garros, we'd be looking at the 5-3 game in the third set, which I just mentioned. And I do want to quickly go over where Alcaraz went wrong here, because it is worth talking about. I mean, think about it. If Alcaraz lost this match, this would have been the game. This would have been the game that you looked at, and you would have said Alcaraz had a chance to go up 2-1 and didn't. And the mistakes that he made here are the mistakes that he rarely made, to be completely honest, throughout the course of the match. Not enough variety going into Zverev's strengths. So here's a serve and volley attempt by Alcaraz. Serve lands where I drew the red dot, and Zverev hits the backhand return. Sharp, low, hard, half volley for Alcaraz. He couldn't handle it. Now, where did Alcaraz go wrong on that? No angle on the serve. No angle on the serve. He hit the serve hard. He hit the serve 131 miles per hour. Guess what? Who cares? Congrats. You hit it hard into Zverev's backhand. Zverev's backhand loves that. If you're going to serve and volley, you better get an angle. Guess what Alcaraz got in the fifth set when he served and volleyed? He got angle, baby. He got angle. So that was the correction, but he didn't get it there. Later on in the game, 30-40, Alcaraz earns the short ball. Forehand, inside out, approach shot. Crushes the forehand. Zverev, backhand pass, laser beam. wrong foots Alcaraz. All he can do is dive for it and throw the racket. All right, what did he do wrong here? What did Alcaraz do wrong? Angle. Not enough angle. He hit it hard. So what? It's almost like Alcaraz just forgot what the keys are against Zverev, especially going into his backhand. You need angle. Pace doesn't freaking matter. That's where Alcaraz went wrong, and he got broken at 5-3. And the reason, one of the reasons why that was so important is because it lingered for Alcaraz. Like, I actually don't think, and this is my only critique of Alcaraz's mental game in this match, I don't think he moved on from that very quickly, because the intensity and energy levels really dropped for a couple games there, and the 5-all service game by Alcaraz in the third set was not good. Zverev ended up winning the third 7-5. All right. One more thing that I need to mention before I get to the line controversy. This is the last thing I'm going to talk about when it comes to the tennis itself. I would like to announce formally that I have nothing interesting or important to say about serving. Now look, if you made me talk about serving, I could talk about serving easily. But what I try to do here in these analyses, should really know that. What I try to do here is filter out the most relevant things, take those and talk about those. Can't talk about every aspect of a match. Impossible. You find the relevant things. And I gotta say, I'm looking for relevance in the serve, and I'm finding it mostly irrelevant. But the brain twisty thing here is that there's relevance to the irrelevance of the serve, which is that when you're talking about an Alexander Zverev match and you're finding the serve to be somewhat irrelevant in terms of the main storylines of the match, isn't that good news for Alcaraz? Doesn't that help Alcaraz? I think so. We talked about Carlitos' return strategy. High and slow. Moonball returns. But other than that, Zverev's serve was not a massive factor, even though there were sets where he served really well. And for the match, I mean, he was fine. He was 73%, which is bang average for him. It was an average serving day for Zverev. Okay, now, I have discussed already this 3-2 service game in the fifth set where Alcaraz dug out of a love 40 hole. The wrinkle here is that at 15:40, Alcaraz hit a second serve up the tee called wide. Renaud Lichtenstein came down from his chair, checked the mark, overruled the call. That gave Alcaraz a first serve. He won that 15:40 point with the wonderful backhand defensive slice, and he ends up holding serve. So, did Zverev get robbed because the Hawkeye review showed the ball to be out? So if electronic line calling was being used at Roland Garros, that is double fault Alcaraz back on serve in the fifth. But Lichtenstein, he looked at the mark and he came up with a different answer. So did Zverev get robbed? Here's the thing, everybody. Hawkeye has a margin of error of 2 to 3 millimeters. Some even venture to say it's 3 to 4 millimeters. But let's be generous and say 2 to 3. I don't know if that's 1 millimeter, but it looked to me like maybe 2 millimeters. It was within the margin of error. And to me, that is really important. That's a very important piece of this, because there are times when Hawkeye proves that umpires were wrong, that they looked at a mark and they were wrong. When you see calls that are, you know, 10 12 millimeters out and the umpire calls it in, or vice versa, you know the umpire misread the mark or looked at the wrong mark. They made a mistake. And that happens. But when a call is so razor thin that the two systems can reasonably differ, there is no guarantee that Hawkeye is right and the umpire is wrong. There is no guarantee. It could be the other way around. It could be either way. It's not fair to say the umpire didn't read the mark correctly because the system of Hawkeye has that margin of error. It's just not fair. Some people said on Twitter, multiple people, and I was surprised by this, that because it was so close, you should just go with what the lines umpire said. Well, this has never been the guidance for chair umpires, nor should it be. Their job is to look at the mark and decide if there's a space or if there's not a space. If there's a space between the mark and the line, that's out. If there's no space, it's in. There is no deferring to the lines judge when there's a close call. It was close, so I'm just going to go with the lines judge. That's never been a thing. And by the way, it shouldn't be a thing, because if it were a thing, players would lose their shit. Right? Could you imagine if a player is looking at a static mark that's sitting on the court right there, and the umpire looks at it and was like, eh, you know what? It's close, so I'm just going to go with the person who watched it in full speed and made an immediate call on the ball instead of looking at this static mark that is sitting here, that is archaeological evidence for where the ball landed on the court. So ultimately, the way this is going to work, with the two systems of Hawkeye and mark checking, those two systems can reasonably differ. You have to choose a system and live with it. Live with the idea that for the 1 to 2 to 3 millimeter calls, you're going to get some differences. And guess what? Next year, all ATP events will have electronic line calling, even on clay. You know what's not going to fix this? I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen. There are going to be times where the electronic line calling makes a decision and the players are going to be looking at the mark and they're going to be saying, are you serious? I'm looking at the mark. I know that ball was in slash out and I know that the electronic line calling is wrong. And the players aren't always reading the mark perfectly and sometimes they're looking at it with rose-colored goggles. So I'm not saying that the player is always right in that case, but if you think that electronic line calling is going to get rid of the controversy that clay brings in regards to these close calls, you're wrong. And just wait and see. 1 year from now, you'll see. There is no foolproof solution when these two systems reasonably differ on close calls. You pick a system and you live with the outcome. Hope you enjoyed. Don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you next time.